Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society, to those of you like me who know that there's something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about the religious and political institutions that are shaping our society, about media reporting, military invasions, and counterproductive economic schemes. We realize that the institutions that we have put in place to do the right thing are actually causing the problem, so they are not the solution. Therefore, instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand who is causing the tragedies that are besieging our world, all while predicting how these events will influence our future. And that is why during our second hour, we're going to change gears. We're going to focus on the one source of hope. We'll engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides hope, the only reliable response to an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, 877-300-7645. I don't know how many of you may have read the op-ed piece that Vladimir Putin wrote and had placed in the New York Times. I did, and I'd like to share it with you. For those of you who have read it, this will be reinforcement to thoughts that you have probably already developed. And for those of you who haven't, this is an interesting insight into the world as we find it today. Dateline is Moscow. It is written by the hand of Vladimir Putin himself. By way of background, Vladimir Putin, as many know, was formerly in the KGB. He was a leader, therefore, in communist Russia, the USSR. But he emerged, as did many of the oligarchs, in what was considered to be the democratization of Russia. It actually did not become a democracy. It became an oligarchy that is based today on fascist principles. Go ahead, Scott.
And somehow he's become the voice of reason.
It's just phenomenal that that this man, who is has taken Russia, which was for a moment free, back into the to a totalitarian dictatorial state, how this man, by comparison, is the voice of reason. Now, he's going to say a lot of things in this letter that are disingenuous and hypocritical. He will say a lot of things in this letter that are absolutely truthful, and he is so vastly more clear in his communications and more accurate in his judgments than is any American politician, that it is worth considering what he has to say. Now, even though we've just introduced Vladimir Putin, I want to be very careful before we go forward. I read many of the responses to the New York Times editorial op-ed piece by New York Times readers. Virtually every response was an ad hominem attack. If we lower ourselves to strictly ad hominem attacks, then we have no chance of determining whether or not something the man said is actually true and worthy of our consideration. So it's important to know his background, but to not use that as the means to criticize what he wrote, unless we find that there are aspects of what he wrote that are inconsistent with his own personal behavior. Moscow. Recent events surrounding Syria have prompted me to speak directly to the American people and to their political leaders. Now imagine that. I mean, just the opening line there. This is a man saying, you know, America, whether it's your politicians or your media, you're being deceived. You're not thinking this through. And exasperated, he says, you know, I know I'm the last person on earth that you probably want to hear this from, but, you know, if I don't, who will? and even our political leaders. You know, it was just a few months ago that the Senate voted to sanction Russia for providing asylum for Edward Snowden, who Americans ought to be naming schools after and launching parades on behalf of. It was this man that Obama, being smug, decided, I'm going to cancel my meeting with him because of my disapproval of his offering sanctuary to the whistleblower. He called him, you know, a derogatory term, talking about him being a bored kid in the back of the class. The editorial continues. It is important to do so at a time of insufficient communication between our societies. Now, it is true that it is important to communicate between nations that have militaries and atomic weapons. But the real issue here is, he's saying, you aren't thinking this through. And even Americans, politicians, you aren't thinking this through. You need to understand the consequence of your actions. And this idea that we're just going to bomb because we think Assad is a bad guy, that's childish. Relations between us have passed through different stages. We stood against each other during the Cold War, but we were also allies once and defeated the Nazis together. The Universal International Organization, the United Nations, was then established to prevent such devastation from ever happening again. Yes, the United States did what the United States has done throughout its history, which is that it has viewed the enemy of its enemy as its friend. And the United States aided and embedded the Soviet Union, and as a result, we left Europe worse than we found it. It's something that Americans don't want to incorporate into their psyches, but that is the truth. The United Nations founders understood that decisions affecting war and peace should only happen by consensus. And with America's consent, the veto by the Security Council permanent members was enshrined in the United Nations Charter. This profound wisdom of this has underpinned the stability of international relations for decades. Vladimir Putin is an internationalist. He is strongly in favor of a one-world order. He wants to have Russia's position to be highly prominent in that one-world order. And so as a collectivist, he highly values the institution of a United Nations as opposed to sovereignty amongst individual nations. I would disagree with him. Many of you listening would probably disagree with him on this point. But the fact of the matter is that the world is heading towards collectivism at a breakneck pace, whether it be international meddling with banking, whether it be treaties in terms of militarism and forming groups of nations who decide what they're going to do to punish or invade other nations, whether it be the United Nations and it being the focal point of issues of this kind, the world is moving towards universal collectivism. That is precisely what Yahweh tells us in his prophetic testimony. Vladimir Putin continues, no one wants the United Nations to suffer the fate of the League of Nations, which collapsed because it lacked real leverage. This is possible if influential countries bypass the United Nations and take military actions without Security Council authorization. Now, it really isn't the case. The United Nations is now enshrined in the fabric of our world. It's not going anywhere. There's no one, you know, the cry in the 1970s and even in the 60s was get us out of the UN. Americans realized that the UN was really a spokes platform, if you will, for communism and for Islam against the West. And that it was a grotesque abuse of American taxpayer contributions. There is very little of that today. The United Nations is here to stay. I would rank it amongst the most evil institutions on the planet. I do not think it contributes to world peace. But the fact of the matter is that if the United States were to have bombed Syria over Soviet warships without UN sanction to do so, it would have weakened the United States and it would have strengthened the United Nations. That would have been the consequence because it would have turned out poorly. There was no way for that scenario to turn out well. None. Zero. And as a result, the credibility of the United Nations that say don't do that would have risen, and the credibility of the United States that would have had yet another disaster on its hands would have fallen. He knows that. Putin does. But Putin also recognizes that if he is on record saying that this is a move that is contrary to the way civilized nations respond today, that his hand is strengthened. The potential strike, Putin writes, by the United States against Syria, despite strong opposition from many countries and major political and religious leaders, including the Pope, who knows why he threw in the Pope, will result in more innocent victims and in an escalation potentially spreading the conflict far beyond Syria's borders. A strike would increase violence and unleash a new wave of terrorism. It could undermine multilateral efforts to resolve the Iranian nuclear program and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and further destabilize the Middle East and North Africa. It could throw the entire system of international law out of balance. Oh, boy, that was a lot, wasn't it? Okay, so what he's doing is he's isolating the United States. He said, you're the rogue nation now. The civilized nations of the world are saying, no, don't do that. But the America he is now positioning, and he's right, is now the mean kid on the block with the biggest club that wants to swing first and ask questions later. You know, carry a big stick, ask questions later. He goes on to say that by bombing Syria, the one thing that is absolutely certain is that more innocent people are going to die. That's what happens when you drop a bomb. It always happens. There was a 0% chance that that won't occur, but we didn't think about that consequence to the American image. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the open letter, the op-ed piece that Vladimir Putin had placed in the New York Times at the end of last week. He began to make points. He said a potential strike, and that's what the United States was going to do prior to Russia coming up with this plan to take control of Syria's chemical weapons. He said would result in more innocent victims. And that's absolutely true. Matter of fact, the reason that the war is not over right now is because the United States, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar have escalated dramatically their supply of more powerful weapons to the rebels. You know, rather than the rebels using just suicide bombs and AK-47s, if you look at the pictures now, they're using anti-aircraft guns, they're using anti-tank weapons, they're using surface-to-air missiles. They have dual 50 cals that they're firing there. They are extraordinarily well equipped now. It's the reason that, in fact, even that Syria is bombarding cities by either air or by artillery, as opposed to going in with their troops, is because their troops are now too vulnerable to the kind of weapons the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar in particular have given the rebels. And as a result, well, we just witnessed over this past weekend the Christian communities being devastated. You know, they're unarmed, they're not combatants in this war, and yet the Muslims are saying convert to Islam or have your head cut off. Coming in with America's weapons to mutilate and murder the Christians in Syria. And so that is the reason that violence has increased recently. And now we're in a situation where to resolve that, America wants to drop bombs and send in cruise missiles. And the result is absolutely certain. More innocent people are going to die. And when they die, what is the world going to see? The world's going to see dead children, dead old ladies, dead old codgers, and shrapnel of American bombs. And once again, what's going to be counterproductive? America's involvement.
Do you think that's why he also threw in the Pope in the beginning? Because it is affecting Christians, and it is the more popular religion.
Yeah, it's very true, because the Roman Catholicism, the previous pope stood up valiantly for Assad. I mean, it's to stand up for Assad is a very difficult thing to do, and I think the pope actually went, shouldn't use the term valiantly, but he strongly stood up for Assad. Assad is a scumbag, but the fact is that his opponents are vastly worse than he is. And so what the Pope recognized is what he was witnessing 2 years ago in Syria, and that's when he did it. 2 years ago in Syria, the beginning of this civil war showed that the Muslims were taking this opportunity to apply Islam to the Christian communities, which is to burn their churches, rape their women, and routinely cut off the men's heads. And so he stood and said, if we allow the rebels to take over this country, then the Christians are walking dead. And so that's probably why he did throw that in, because it's the Vatican's support of Assad is extraordinarily strong. If you were to bomb Assad, America puts itself in direct conflict with the Vatican. It's something, now, I don't mind being in conflict with the Vatican, but it is something to think about if you're a politician in this country, which is probably the reason he threw it in. You're right. Now, he did say that this would be an escalation, spreading the conflict beyond Syria's borders. What he did not say, and all the hints at later, is that the entire reason for this war is because of the United States escalating the conflict between the Sunnis and Shias. We invaded Iraq. We gave a country that had a majority Shia population to Iran and removed the Sunni dictator. And so it's true that if in fact this civil war is altered so that the Sunni Mujahideen prevail, then their next stop will be Lebanon. And right after that, it will be in Iran. Now, we might think that's a swell idea, but I want to tell you, you engulf that entire region in civil war as opposed to one country. Now you're not talking about hundreds of thousands of people dying, but millions. And now what do you do? What do you do when you pour gasoline on a fire that's already out of control? And that's what he's saying. It would escalate the existing conflict far beyond Syria's borders. We would affect pour gasoline on this fire. It's a fire that cannot be put out, but you don't resolve it by adding more fire. We'll return to Putin's letter after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We read in Putin's letter that he said that a strike would increase violence and unleash a new wave of terrorism. He didn't say it might. He said it would. And the reason for it is that sensing a chance to prevail, the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the Qataris, and the United States, which is providing the weapons to them, would continue to increase, as the United States has just done. About 2 weeks ago, the United States, through the CIA, began funneling weapons directly to the rebels as opposed to indirectly to them. And just as we did in the first Afghan war, that's going to unleash additional terrorism, particularly when the pictures are shown of American bombs killing Muslim women. It would undermine, he says, multilateral efforts to resolve the Iranian nuclear problem. It would hugely exacerbate that. Now, there is no way to resolve that problem. I mean, there is none. The United States could potentially bomb some 20 sites in Iran, and if it did, because of where those sites are, in many cases, it would have to use massive weaponry. There's some that, of course, they could use buster bunker bombs or other kinds of weapons that would not kill any civilians other than the contractors that are working on those centrifuges. But there's many places where the Iranians have built their capability in proximity of schools and hospitals and the like. I don't see the United States doing that. I see the Iranians completing their nuclear program. So he knows this is going to continue and that there's nothing that's going to happen other than the Iranians will redouble their efforts to complete their nuclear program, because the one thing that makes it possible to bomb Syria but makes it impossible to bomb Pakistan, for example, in the same way, is that Pakistan has nuclear weapons. You know, if we were to try to take out the government in Pakistan, they'd use their nuclear weapons. That's the reason the Iranians want it. It makes you impervious to attacks like this. There are few, goes on to say, that Syria is not witnessing a battle for democracy. And that's something that American politicians in particular have been guilty of promoting. It is an absolute lie. There are no democratic stalwarts there that said we're fighting here for democracy in the American way. No. You have two sides here. One is a dictator trying to keep himself in power, and he's a secularist. And the other side is fundamentalist jihadists who wish to impose a Sharia law on Syria, make it an Islamic state. And so there is no battle for democracy here. There is no good side here, is what he's saying. He's saying emphatically, Syria is not witnessing a battle for democracy. Let that sink into your heads, American politicians and Americans who voted for them. But this is an armed conflict between government and opposition in a multi-religious country. Yes. What he's saying out, this is a fight between Sunni and Shia Islam, with the government representing Shia Islam and the rebels universally representing Sunni Islam. He says there are few champions of democracy in Syria. In terms of percentage, it's somewhere between none and 5%, perhaps. But there are more than enough Al-Qaeda fighters. He didn't say Al-Qaeda because it would be awkward in the sentence, because Al just simply means the. So, and Qaeda means base. It's a term that the United States conceived for what bin Laden was doing on behalf of the Taliban in the first Afghan war, where he... having received a reasonable education, because his father was a primary builder of mosques and palaces for the Saud family, had a system, a database of jihadists from around the world that he could manage and call upon to fight using Americans' weapons against the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan. So it's just simply the base. He says, but there's more than enough Qaeda fighters and extremists of all stripes battling the government. That's true. The United States State Department has designated al-Nusra, the Victory Front, and the Islamic State of Iraq from and the Levant, from which they emerged, by the way, fighting with the opposition as terrorist organizations. And the al-Nusra Front is the dominant force in Syria, and the world knows it. I mean, when McCain and Kerry said last week, citing an article that saying that that the vast majority of the Mujahideen fighting in the among the rebels in Syria were not fundamentalist Muslims, that they were genuinely fighting for democracy. The article they quoted was from a woman who has been and is a advocate for fundamentalist Muslims. In fact, she has just been fired from the organization that she used to write her article because she lied about her academic credentials. So he says that the United States has acknowledged that the al-Nusra Front, which is the dominant force in this battle, is a terrorist organization. This eternal conflict fueled by foreign weapons supplied to the opposition, is one of the bloodiest in the world. He's taking a swipe again at America. He's being as blunt as he can be in international parlance. He's saying, you want to know why there's so many people dead here? You want to talk about this massacre that's occurred in Syria? Look in the mirror. You supplied the weapons. This is bloody. There have been over 100,000 murdered in this civil war because America, you decided that it was in somehow in your interest to supply weapons to the civilian jihadists that were trying to undermine the government. I mean, it is no different than how America would react if Mexico and Canada were to decide that they were going to supply weapons that are illegal for Americans to own to Catholics and to Mormons, let's say, and to supply all of these weapons to Catholics and to Mormons so that they could go and attack and destroy the American government. That's what happened in Syria, and we're responsible for doing it. Mercenaries from the Arab countries fighting there, and hundreds of militants from Western countries and even Russia, are an issue of deep concern, he writes. That's true. A huge percentage of the Syrian jihadists are not Syrian. They're the same thing that took place in Afghanistan. It's the same thing that took place in Libya. In Islam, the only guarantee to entering the brothel with multiple virgins and rivers that flow with wine is to get killed killing infidels. And since a peaceful Muslim or a Muslim that disagrees with you is considered to be an infidel, then they're open season. And so Muslims from around the world have come flooded into Syria for the opportunity to be jihadists. It is what their religion commands of them. And so he says, so, you know, it should be a concern to you that the majority of the people that are fighting there are from countries around the world, from the United States, from Russia. And might they not return to our countries with the experience they acquired in Syria? After all, after fighting in Libya, these same extremists moved on to Mali. This threatens us all. It's wise counsel. From the outset, Russia has advocated peaceful dialogue, enabling the Syrians to develop a compromise plan for their own future. We are not protecting the Syrian government, but international law. We need to use the United Nations Security Council, blah, blah, blah. And then he's posturing. He is protecting Syria for one reason, and most thoughtless Americans will say because Syria is a customer of Russian weapons. That's just, think, folks. Who is the largest weapon supplier in the world? By 10 times the amount that Russia supplies. The United States. So if we're going to accuse Russia of only thinking based upon who buys our weapons, then we have to hold ourselves accountable because most rogue nations buy American weapons. No, the reason that Russia is supporting Syria is because Russia is in economic bed with Iran. It is that simple. You need to understand that oil has become the de facto currency of the world because America has destroyed the value of its dollar and the European Union has destroyed the value of the euro. And therefore, the de facto currency of the world is oil, and the Russians and Chinese benefit from the oil reserves at the Caspian Sea, which they alone have pipelines that enable them to transport. And as a result of that, they are in lockstep with Iran economically, and that is why they support Syria. You need to think it through and understand why the forces are aligned as they are. In fact, it's the Caspian Sea oil that caused America to invade Afghanistan in the first place. It is why America used the Taliban. It's why the Taliban exists, because Pakistan and the United States wanted to build a pipeline to access that oil as well. He says there is no doubt that poison gas was used in Syria. As a matter of fact, there's no doubt that the first attack, the one that killed 29 people, was perpetrated by the rebels. But there is every reason to believe that it was not used by the Syrian army. Yeah, logic. You know, and I know it's a thing that we don't like to use anymore, particularly in the West, but it is a valuable tool if you're willing to deploy it. Logic tells you that there was no chance that the Syrian government ordered the use of the chemical weapons. Now, is it a possibility that some group of either military or militant Shiites use it? Yeah, it's possible. But when you think it through, what you recognize is that the United States and the Germans have recordings of hundreds of conversations between Assad and his military units, where the military units have requested the use of chemical weapons, and he has universally said no. There is no recording of Assad saying yes this time. So when the United States, Kerry and Obama, say that Assad chose to use chemical weapons on his own people, that is to create the image of Assad doing that when, in fact, that did not occur. We'll return to Shattering This. So I am your host, Yada. We're considering this letter written by Vladimir Putin to the United States, both to our citizens and to our government leaders. He wrote and said that there is every reason to believe that the Syrian army did not use the sarin gas, but instead opposition forces, and that they did so to provoke a intervention by their powerful foreign patrons, who would be siding with the fundamentalists. Now, that's amazing. Here's an international leader who actually said that the jihadists, that the mujahideen, that the Sunni rebels are fundamentalists. Amazing. That's something that no American in the media, no American in politics, no cleric is willing to do. But it's true. The jihadists, the suicide bombers, the perpetrators of 9/11, those that were fighting to kill around the world, they're fundamentalists. We're not fighting a war against terrorists or extremists or radicals, but fundamentalist Muslims. Muhammad was a terrorist. The Quran orders Muslims to follow his example. You cannot be a good Muslim if you are not a terrorist. The ninth surah of the Quran was written expressly to condemn peaceful Muslims, saying if they cease to be Muslims, they become hypocrites. Allah orders the good Muslim jihadists to kill them so that he can attend to their tortures in hell. Vladimir Putin, to his credit, did what no politician around the world has been willing to do. He acknowledged that the jihadists are fundamentalists. Powerful. And he says that if Americans fell for the ploy and bombed Syria based on the ruse that this was perpetrated by Assad against his own people, that they would be siding with the fundamentalists. Reports that militants are preparing another attack, this time against Israel, cannot be ignored, Putin wrote. Yes, the first sarin gas attack we know, based upon all of the analysis done by Russia and the United Nations, was perpetrated by the rebels. And in this particular case, there is video of the rebels launching a crude warhead of the kind of rockets that were found on the scene into a large mortar in the exact area where America said that they were fired, to make it look like it was being perpetrated by the Assad government. And it is essential that we know that not only would it have been suicidal and irrational for Assad to use such weapons, he has universally said no. There is no recording of him changing this time and saying yes. that this time it would have been unbelievably stupid because he was within 3 miles of his own presidential palace. And lastly, he knew that by using them, had he done so, he would have invited this upon himself. Now, this is amazing, this next line. It is alarming that military intervention in international conflicts in foreign countries has become commonplace for the United States. Is it in America's long-term interest? No, I doubt it. Millions around the world increasingly see America not as a model of democracy, but as relying solely on brute force, cobbling coalitions together under the slogan, "You're either with us or against us." May I list a few? America decided we would invade Korea to solve what we thought was the advance of communism. We did the same thing in Vietnam. 100,000 Americans are dead because of our decision to use brute force. How about Grenada? You remember Panama? How about Serbia? Somalia? Afghanistan, not once but twice. Once through proxy, the second through our own force. Iraq, not once but twice. Kuwait, Libya, Pakistan, Yemen. And we use our military to get our way in Egypt. Hasn't turned out very well there either, has it? And we are supplying the weapons to the rebels in Syria. Over the course of 60 years, the United States has intervened with brute force 15 times. That's once every 4 years, once every presidential term. America has chosen to intervene in international conflicts in foreign countries with brute force. Is it in Americans' interest, Putin asks? I doubt it.